Okay, let's get started. So, first, let me excuse myself for doing this talk in English, but with two words of Portuguese, I wouldn't get far. This is a short introduction about the LibreOffice project and how you might get involved into it. So first, who am I? I'm Björn Michaelsen, and I right now work as the package maintainer for Ubuntu for LibreOffice. And I've been working with LibreOffice and before that OpenOffice quite some time. So I started in 2008 in the old writer framework team, and in 2011 I changed over to Canonical, and 6 weeks later the Sun division was closed down. I imagined that they couldn't work without me, but maybe I'm wrong there. I'm also a deputy member of the board of the Document Foundation, which is nothing special, at least two full members of the board are in the third row here, so I can't claim much credit for that. But I'm also working on developing the code in the Engineering Steering Committee, so I have some insight into that. So let's see what I want to talk about. So first, a little bit of motivation. Why LibreOffice and why TDF and why should you care? Then I'll go to hunt down some myths that surround the project since the start, and that might actually have been true at some point in time but are not true anymore. And then I'll get to Easy Hacks, which is a way to get involved in the project as a developer, and especially talk about Bibersect, which is one part of an Easy Hack, how you can contribute there. And in the end, I'll show you how you can, once you solved an Easy Hack or worked on that, can continue to work on and become more and more a member of the community. So first, why care about LibreOffice, or why care about productivity? I'm sorry that I took the German posting there on monster.de, because I tried to look up an international one or something, but Monster by now is so has a confusing new web interface that I didn't find out how to easily search for something. But the point is, if you look on Monster, you find 400 jobs for SharePoint, and if you ever had to work with that, you know what a tragedy that is. You really want to have a free product there that you can improve, that you can make better, and that you're not forced to work with something like that. Actually, all these points are from a slide that I created for the Chaos Communication Congress at the end of the last year. So the second question was already there then, and it got a lot more relevance in the last month and weeks. So do you really want to keep your data, or data, actually your government, to keep data about you in a secure cloud and not in LibreOffice, an open solution? And then we have the situation with mobile devices, and they all do small apps, not really applications, and so they are all just doing JavaScript. And if you look at the CPUs these days on these mobile devices, they're actually pretty capable to run a full office suite. So an ARM 1 gigahertz CPU is a terrible thing to waste. And just a few days ago, Florian Effenberger posted this picture of two Raspberry Pis that are branded with LibreOffice, and actually these small devices for $30 to $40 are capable of running LibreOffice. You can also run LibreOffice on a Nexus 7. If you Google on YouTube for that, you find that too. And SUSE's working hard on making LibreOffice running on Android. So you have all these platforms, and actually you get a free office suite on that. So contributing to LibreOffice is scary to a lot of people because it's such a big project. And you find quotes like that on the internet a lot. And that might have been true in 2009, but today actually this is a bit of trolling. Let's see how it looked like in 2009. This is what happened if you try to start a LibreOffice build. I don't really want to go into the details here, but just looking at that, you see that there are a lot of steps to take, and each of them can go wrong, and each of them, when it goes wrong, can terribly confuse a new contributor. And since, well, building LibreOffice is pretty much a prerequisite to contributing, if you fail there, you never contribute to the project. So just one example of that is have a configure script that runs a Perl script, which creates a bash script, which is sourced into a bash, which then calls a Perl script, which calls dmake tool. If you think this is sane, actually, I don't know if I want you as a contributor. So we cleaned a lot of that up, and now you can build LibreOffice once you got the source with essentially two commands, which is run autogen and run make, and then you have LibreOffice. And the whole, the complete instructions to get your first build on Linux is 7 lines on this wiki page. And that was an effort that was done only on LibreOffice, and it was started. So I wrote this new build system that made that simple still while I was at Sun. So I actually was the guy who wrote the new system. But what you can see there, this blue line going up and migrating stuff to the new build system, that almost exclusively was done by volunteers, by others, not by me. All the stuff I did was pretty much the first 10 modules, and you can see that that wasn't even, this is pretty much a part of the stuff that happened between 3.3 and 3.4. So what you see there is that we already grew a community of people that could do this stuff, and we shared and broadened the knowledge to do this, and it was not some arcane wisdom of some single person, but it was a broad knowledge in all of the community, which is great. So this makes it by now a lot easier to contribute to LibreOffice, and it's this myth from before that still haunts us. But we should, if you hear that, you should know that it's completely different now than it was a few years ago. Also, the build times got better. On the last Hackfest in Hamburg, we started new Windows boxes, and Windows is terribly slow to build. And still, we got the build time for developer build down to 80 minutes. And when we started, so 2009, around that time, you needed that time alone to just build Writer and not the whole project. And if you do all the tricks, when I do that at home, I can build LibreOffice in under 2 minutes. So we are a lot faster, and it's a lot easier by now. So second myth, which is also from the ancient times, and which says pretty much, we don't want new contributors. And that really makes me angry, because this project is taking hard efforts to make it easy for new contributors to get started. And one of these things is EasyHacks. And I think the original idea for that was by Italo and Michael Meeks, I think, right? I'm not sure. It was before I even started joining the project. And it started just on one wiki page describing things, how you could get involved in the project and how you could do stuff. And the idea was, if you look at this graph here that I also stole from Italo, I have to admit, you will see you could split that into two groups. The first group is the one to the left with the major contributions, or with the huge number of contributions, and those are the veterans of the project. And the other ones are the ones who are just joining and getting onto the project. And of course, the guys to the left know a lot about the project, and they don't have all the time to actually fix all the stuff that they have on their mind. And the easy hacks are a way for them to communicate to others ideas that might be fixable for everyone and doable for everyone to get involved. And this is exceptionally important for the project, because to grow the number of people who can contribute to the project in the way these people on the left do, you have to grow this long tail, because you get people like that from the second group. So we need both groups, and we need to grow both groups. So what happened? This wiki page was set up, and tasks were added, and very quickly, by the time I joined, this page was so huge and confusing that it was terribly difficult to actually see which tasks were done, which tasks were in process of being made, and what was already completed, because it was just such a huge list of things that could be done. So in a way, the EasyHacks were victim to its own success. So what we did then, we moved all these hacks onto Bugzilla and created queries for them. So now if you go to this wiki page, you can actually look up, I know C++, I can code on that. Show me things that are beginner tasks for C++. You can also see stuff that is not requiring C++ skills. Stuff that requires just shell scripting skills. And so this is a lot more flexible, and it's also easier for us to track our progress with the EasyHacks. And actually, this chart shows the number of EasyHacks that are solved. And as you can see, this is constantly rising number of things that are getting done, and most of these things are not done by veterans in the project that have like 15 years of experience with the code. This is done by people who might have just joined the project or just looked it up for the first time. So yeah, just as I said, it's not only C++, although if you are a C++ hacker, of course we would love to have you on the project, but there are other tasks where you can get involved, and you do not need to know C++. And yeah, if you get involved in that, C++ is LibreOffice is a pretty big project. So if you start finding a corner where you work on, you might actually very quickly become an expert for that area. An example is Markus Mohnhardt, who's now a calc hacker, just like the old guard, like Eike, and he's working on calc just like one of the old guys. So you can get a real contributor to the project and real authority on a part of code pretty quickly, just by the size of the code base. So let's have a look at a few examples of easy hacks. This is one example. And I don't want to talk too much about it because Olivier will have a session on that, talking about the details there. But we have these old, ugly, very wide dialogues, or had those for a lot of parts of LibreOffice. And we now have a layout code, which is what you see on the right, which actually lays out the dialogues in the way that they just are sized in the way that everything is readable. This is also making it a lot easier for localization, because the reason why a lot of these dialogues are so wide and ugly is because, for example, German has some huge long words, and you need to have the dialogue to actually fit those words in. So these dialogues just got really, really huge just to make the German word fit in. And when you had another language, it just had like two small words there and nothing. All the rest was just empty space. And it's good that we finally get rid of that. And yeah, Olivier will show you the details in another session. The next one is German comments. I thought I should kill this slide for this talk because I'm not in Germany, but I heard that in southern Brazil, quite a lot of people know German very well, or know someone who knows German very well. So we still have more than 10,000 lines of German comments in the code base that we really like to have in English so that others can actually read them. This is still historical depth that we have from the time that LibreOffice was not OpenOffice, was indeed StarOffice, and was developed as a closed source application somewhere near my hometown in Hamburg. So yeah, that is an easy way to get started too. And you actually do not have to know C++ for that. Although it helps, because sometimes you understand the comments only if you understand some C++ or programming. The third example of easy hacks is bisecting. And if you know JIT bisect, you know that it is a way to find a regression in source code. So you have one version of a program, and you know that it works, and you have another version of the program, and you know that it broke. So you know somewhere in between, something broke. And JIT bisect is a pretty awesome thing to find that, find the place where it broke, because what it does is, you know, this one was good, this one is bad. Okay, so I go into the middle, I compile the project, and I do a test, and if it's good, I go again in the middle. If it's bad, I go back. If it's good, I go back. And so you get in the end to one commit that actually broke your project. You could do that with LibreOffice, although you would probably starve in the time you do that, because going in the middle and building LibreOffice takes quite some time. So if you have a lot of commits, you have a lot of builds to do, and that takes very long time. So this is where I had an idea to put completely compiled LibreOffice builds into a JIT repository. And Michael Stahl, one of my colleagues who sat next to me at Sun and is now working at Red Hat, said to that there are crazy people like you on the LibreOffice project, and didn't quite believe what I wanted to do there. But I just did that, so I let my computer run 55 builds of LibreOffice over a few days and got a nice warm room in that time. And then I had a range of 500 commits, and I had 53 builds over that time. So I could now go back in time just to find the exact place where something broke. And the most awesome thing about that is the way JPEG stuff at 450 megs each, that would be 220 gigabytes. But actually, JPEG's the binary difference so good that it's only 15 megs per install. So you have a very small download and can essentially go back in time and find where something broke in your build. Yeah, so we found a way to solve the problem that LibreOffice is pretty hard to build, and bisecting is a hard thing to do. So from this initial test run of 55 builds, we now did that with every release, and we now have one bisect repository that finds that contains 262 builds of LibreOffice from the mid between LibreOffice 3.4 and LibreOffice 3.5 up until LibreOffice 4.0. And we can essentially walk back and forth in time in that whole range and find exactly which commit broke something. And from that point on, we have now in the QA laboratory in Canonical a machine that does a daily build and updates and creates a new build every time 50 commits are on master again. So we have now essentially all the range of LibreOffice since mid 3.5 covered with bisect and can walk back and forth in time. How is this important? Well, if you go back and forth in time and find the 50 commits that broke something, with a project as big as LibreOffice, you have a good idea of what broke your product in that range. Because if you look at the comments, you might actually think, okay, it's this or it's that one. With 50 commits, it's pretty easy to find out. And then you can go to the developer that did that change and say, hey, it seems like you broke that with that commit. And suddenly, magically, this developer is very interested in getting this fixed, because no developer wants to have to be guilty of breaking something. So he will look into it, and even if he did not break something, he will find out who else it was. So it's pretty easy from that point on to actually solve the problem. While if you have a range of two major versions, it's almost impossible to find out what actually caused the problem. And you see this here. You see these two bars to the right. And the essential point is there's a lot more green on the bisect one. The left bar, the right bar is all bugs in LibreOffice. And you see how many of them are resolved, how many of them are unresolved and might still need clarification or a test document or whatever, and how many of them were duplicates and stuff like that. So the duplicates is the gray area. But what you see with the bisected ones, that over 60% of those are fixed. So when you have a bug and you really care about it to be fixed, the best way to ensure that it gets fixed is to bisect this bug, because then, 60% of those bugs are already fixed by now, and that's a lot more than for other bugs. So it's a very easy way to ensure your bug gets fixed quicker. Okay, so these were three examples of how you might start contributing to LibreOffice. And if you, for example, got involved with the dialogues and did a change there, and you now have your change done and want to upload it somewhere, you probably ask yourself questions like that. Do I need permission of someone? Do I need an account? Do I need to qualify? Will there be some committee that is judging me before I'm allowed to start contributing? And the question to all of this is no, because we by now have Garrett, and that actually allows you, if you have an open ID, to get involved right from the start, without ever having to ask anyone for permission. So you can get to this website and you can upload your change directly from JIT, and it will be taken from there. Before we did that, we had we asked people to just send their patches to the developer mailing list. And that worked somewhat, but there always were troubles with manual fumbling with patches, finding out what a patch is actually against, confusion about when a patch went in and stuff like that. So with Garrett, it's a lot easier, and you can actually easily track if your patch is going forward on, and if your patch is getting reviewed. And there's some bonus and extras for that, from that. We have, with LibreOffice, we have three platforms. And most developers don't have a Mac machine, a Windows machine, and a Linux machine at home, and have a complete build environment set up for LibreOffice on all of them, and are eager to just try out a complete build on all these platforms just to see if they are not breaking something. So, yeah, and we don't want everyone to have this requirement. So what we can we do about that? Well, with Garrett, you upload your change, and you can... currently, you have to ask someone on IRC, but he will trigger a build, and it will get built on all platforms. You will get a complete build log with complete reporting if your patch builds on all platforms, passes tests, and everything. So that makes this stuff a lot easier for contributors. And soon, we are on the way to get this done, to have a shuttle button on Garrett, so you just click a button and you fire off three machines to build your stuff on three platforms. The second thing is you can actually look on Garrett and see how others are reviewed and what others say about your patch or what others say about other patches. So you can learn a lot along the way just seeing what the reviews on other patches are. And for people like me who like to tweak around with a build system, I can, for example, upload my change and trigger this build thingy. Even though I'm allowed to contribute to push directly to the master and break things for everybody, I still have the option to go to Garrett and with that get the test builds done before stuff breaks for everyone. But if this all is confusing to you, of course you still can just send a mail to the developer list with a patch attached. But in the end, I hope these additional features make it convincing to you that it's a good idea to use Garrett. And here's an example how this with the test building looks like. Thomas uploaded a patch and added a comment to the patch that he likes to have a test build for this one. And then someone else kicked off this, and all the tinderboxes reported back that it would build successfully on Windows, Linux, and on Mac. And with that, the patch went in. So you can... Even if, for example, if you're with a tiny little netbook like this one and you sit somewhere on an airport and don't have a big build machine, you could make a one-line change and upload it to Garrett and say, okay, I didn't test this, but it seems to be the right thing to do. And then these build machines could do the building and the testing for you. So you could work from a machine that can't even build LibreOffice in a good time itself with that. So where does this take you? Once you have your first EasyHex installed, well, it gets you involved in the LibreOffice community. And in Europe, we had 17 events last year, and this year, at least 15. So there's a lot going on in Europe because a lot of the developer base is there. But Brazil is getting there. You see, there are people, you probably recognize a few of them in the room if you look around. you can get involved in the community, and that is something that should happen locally. You should get in touch with the people in proximity, to talk to them, to get together, to share knowledge, and to push things forward. So I really hope that we get more events like this started. And one thing to get involved is, for example, to join the workshop that we have tomorrow, where we essentially will try to look at all the questions that someone new to the project has, and get everyone just through the steps to become the contributor in development, with getting your first build done, maybe doing a bibisect and stuff like that. Yeah, and if you do not want to go to an event, you can still go on IRC and talk to us on LibreOffice Dev or on LibreOffice QA. So I kindly ask you to join us. Join us in the workshop tomorrow. And just reviewing my slides, just in mind, 10 minutes before I started talking here, I realized that I almost exclusively only talk about development. There are other areas where you can get involved. Of course, you can start translating, updating translations for a new version. There's an QA contest going on right now, which is a huge success. They are trying to, just from all the new bug reports that are coming in, to find all those that are complete and have test documents and everything attached to them. And they have more than 200 bugs confirmed in this short period of time. They actually have 10 to 15 new contributors to QA in this 1 week. So this is another area where you can get involved. There's documentation where you can get involved. There's marketing where you can get involved. So all these areas are the areas where you can contribute to LibreOffice. Okay, so this is the end of my slides. So I would like to answer some questions, if there are some. Do we have another mic?
Hi, Bjorn. Is there any easy hack in the set of bibisect bugs?
I don't completely understand the question.
Is there any easy hack to solve a bibisect bug in the set of bibisect bugs?
So the bugs that are bibisectable are regressions. So I mean, all of them have to be regressions, because it has to have worked at some point in time. Otherwise, you can't bibisect something.
Okay.
Most of the easy hacks are not bugs that you bibisect, because the easy hacks are stuff that is already looked upon from a senior developer or someone who's a veteran in the project and says, okay, this is something that should be easy to solve for someone who looks into it. So it usually is not a regression, because so these are pretty much two distinct groups. If something is an easy hack, or if something is in regression and we actually know how to solve it, we should just do it. So if On the other hand, the easy hacks are the stuff that we know is easy to solve, but that is not something that is terribly urgent for the product. So the you saw the examples, like the comments, German comments in the source code. They will never directly affect the product. They hugely impact the project because it makes more people being able to contribute and get involved in the project, but it does not directly affect the product. And there are other areas where there's just cleanup of weird old C++ ways to spell things or to express things, which are which apart from maybe being a bit slower in a almost not noticeable way, do not have a direct impact on the product. So, but then again, for the project, it's again important because if you do these easy hacks, you will get to a point where you can actually implement new features easier and better. So it allows us to freeze us from some bounds that we are in now because of some old code base. So that is stuff that enables us to go forward and challenge new things. And usually, or quite often, if someone starts with an easy hack, he gets a feeling of the area of code that is being touched. And with that, he gets an idea of the features that he might want to implement in that area, or the improvements he might want to make in that area. So an easy hack is just a starting point for someone to get involved. And in a lot of cases, we hope to get to the point that the contributor suddenly sees other things without having to have an easy hack for that, where he can build upon that and just move forward on his own. So the easy hacks are really the starting point in the mentoring part of it. More questions?
Hello. I have another question for you. Could you tell us about a little bit about the mobile version of LibreOffice?
In general. So, we had. I showed the three ways we have LibreOffice. Two ways are actually mobile, but third is closely related, which is the Raspberry Pi. So the hard part is getting LibreOffice run on an ARM machine, and that part is solved essentially by now. So you have LibreOffice running on Ubuntu on ARM, which means that you can run it on a Nexus 7, you can run it on a phone. Actually, there's a cool video by Simon Phipps, who's also at this conference, but I don't see him in the audience right now. But that actually shows that an Ubuntu phone that is running Android, and when you drop it into a docking station, you get an Ubuntu desktop. And with that, you can actually work like a normal Ubuntu desktop. So that is something that is clearly solving a lot of problems that you have otherwise with mobile, because if you dock your phone in, you actually have a keyboard and a mouse and all that, so you can really use it like a normal desktop, and you can carry your data with you. But, and that is the second part of the message, which is the problem that is currently not solved yet, or that we are in the process of solving. If you really want to have a small form factor, like a tablet or a phone, squeezing LibreOffice with its current UI into that is not going to work. So although we can run the code there, it's not something you want to use at this point in time on these small form factors. So this is the challenge that is ahead of us. Other questions?
Please, can you tell us a couple of things that are coming in LibreOffice, the next version?
Oh,
what's new? What's coming?
You probably know that better than me.
I know.
So, one thing is a lot of these new dialogues that we saw on this one slide. There's huge progress there. So this is one of the most visible changes, and there are a lot of other things, but I really don't want to pick out one over the others right now. So, do you have something special in mind? I mean, you know the changes. Well, yeah, we also will have. We will have these new dialogues. We will have an experimental sidebar that we imported, which is still an experimental feature, so I wouldn't use it in production yet, but it is a huge improvement or a huge advance in the way the UI currently looks, so it makes a lot of difference there. Any more questions?
Mr. John, I've seen the talk of Simon Phipps, which you mentioned, and he mentioned OpenOffice and LibreOffice in the connection when he said you should trade control for influence, and Oracle didn't want to trade this control and wanted to keep the influence, and so we finally know that there was a split between OpenOffice and LibreOffice. And I think it's a terrible thing for users, because they want to have one replacement for what they have now, and now they have two and are confused. I think all Linux distributions have chosen for LibreOffice, and it's fine. But do you think there is some way to get the OpenOffice guys over to LibreOffice? Also, Simon's opinion was, well, it will be a matter of time. But what will you do? What do you think?
Yeah. So at the point of in time when the split happened, I was still working at Oracle. So if you want to, you can find a lot of German posts by me on the German OpenOffice list that were claiming that LibreOffice will not work and that's terribly complicated and you have no idea how complex it is and the challenges involved are terrible and you will not succeed. And I was right in the point that it was terribly hard, but we achieved everything and more than we originally imagined possible with the Document Foundation. So all these challenges we were overcome with the Document Foundation and with LibreOffice. As to merging these two projects, from my point of view, it's a simple question. Of course, you can merge that stuff into LibreOffice. You can't possibly do it the other way around. And that's not because LibreOffice does not want to or someone is very stubborn at LibreOffice. It's because we are a distributed project and we are sharing the power between the contributors. And since we are not signing over the copyright to the Document Foundation, every contributor retains his rights. So even if someone decided he wants to put LibreOffice in another way, he would have to have the unvetoed consensus of all the contributors. So as long as that doesn't happen, the only option is for the Apache guys to join LibreOffice. So it's up to them.
And do you think this will happen, or can we convince them? Because every reasonable man knows that we just need one of the same thing to not confuse our users.
Yeah. So it's really out of my control, so I'm not commenting on that. Okay. Thank you very much.